to him.
Yeah. All right, what about his snakes?
He didn't like snakes. He never liked snakes. And I don't blame him. I don't either. Every time he'd do something to me, I'd say, I'm going to get back at you. One of these days, you know, one of these days. I said, you don't like snakes. Just one of these days. So one day he got a package in the mail. It was long, about that wide, about that deep. And he looked at that, and there was no return address on it. And he thought, Cora sent me a snake, because I had just come back from outside. She sent me a snake. I'm sure she sent me a snake. So he took that box home, put it in a bucket of water, and left it there for a week. He did not take it out of that bucket. Finally, we were over there one day, and he said, you think you pulled one on me, but he said, you didn't. He said, I'll show you what I did with it. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. And I didn't know what he's talking about. He went over to that bucket of water and pulled this thing out, and he said, I drowned it. You didn't get. So he opened it up, and it was a hand-painted tie from his brother in California. Beautiful hand-painted tie that he thought
had been a snake.
And I told him, I said, see there? I said, you've done so much to so many people, you just can't even trust anybody. Ruined that tie, just absolutely ruined it. I couldn't keep from dying laughing because he was so paranoid that somebody was going to do something to him. But he ruined that tie, literally ruined it.
No.
I kept telling him, I haven't sent you anything. Oh, yeah, right.
Did you ever have any contact with Rachel Zook?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Her nephew
isn't
lives right now.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm, down in Billiken subdivision.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I knew Rachel quite well. Uh-huh. Yeah. Used to go up
and
visit.
She used to drive me nuts at the Institute.
Yes, I imagine.
She kept insisting on cooking sauerkraut for lunch. And the building at that time was very tightly built. There were no ventilation in it.
Oh, yeah.
And you'd walk in about 11:45 and all you could smell was sauerkraut.
She was heating up
three quarters of it.
Yeah, she did like her sauerkraut. Yeah, Rachel was an interesting woman.
Too bad about that crazy accident.
Nobody understands what happened there.
They had to be arguing, and she didn't even dawn on her.
Not
she was
pay
on
attention
her
to what she come out of. Yeah. But it amazes me that she went that far on it.
Yeah.
You know, without
something was
knowing
wrong.
Where she was.
Something was wrong. Did you know Bob Strait?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know Bob Strait?
I know Bob Strait really well, yes.
I see he's in the FOMA. I didn't know whether he was still in the country.
Yeah, he is.
He wasn't, but I see he's still in the FOMA.
Because
I was thinking, he's an old-timer out here. We ought to talk to him.
Yeah, I saw him not too long ago either. Just, you know, cross paths. I don't see him too often, but cross paths.
It's been a while since we've seen him.
Yeah, all the old-timers I see periodically, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of these days I'm going to give him a call and see if he'll come over and tell us his adventures.
Yeah.
You ever understand why he carried a pistol on his hip?
Yeah, he's paranoid.
Yeah.
Most of it.
Did you ever carry a pistol?
No, I had one inside the front door. I used to be scared back there because, you know, by myself. And people would, GIs would come back there in target practice and things. And it would scare me to death because they wouldn't always know that the house was there because, you know, we were... And so, anytime anybody came back there, they had to be coming to me because nobody else went back there. And this one day there was a car came up and there was four men in it, and it just scared me silly. So I was quiet, you know, and they got out of their cars and they were standing there looking around. And I thought, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. So I had this 30-06, right, you know, and Bob said, keep it there, and, you know, just don't. And he said, use it if you have to. And so I thought, well, now what am I going to do? Because these guys looked like they were just looking around, you know. And I didn't know them, didn't know who they were. So one of them come over to the house, to the door, and was looking around. And I had one of those, the door was about that thick. It was an old refrigerator door that my husband had cut down and put on the log cabin. And it was real short.
Mm-hmm.
I have done in more politicians than you can shake a stick at. Right here.
Because
they didn't duck. And anyway, this guy, you know, stood there at the door for a few minutes, you know. So I reached over and I picked up this 30-06. And, you know, and he turned around and said something to one of the guys and kind of took a step back. And when he did, I just took my foot and kicked the door open and just stood there with the gun just like this. And he goes, his hands went up like this. He goes, oh, lady, I'm not after anything. We just didn't know where the road went to. And I said, well, now you know. I said, you've got about 5 seconds to get out of here. And so, you know, they all got in the car and left. But it was the only time I ever had to do that. But I was so scared. I didn't know what was coming up. Sure. You never knew in those days what was coming out there.
Was there a lot of crimes against other people by strangers? Or
no, there's a lot of people coming and just pilfering, looking.
Pilfering.
You know, because they, especially the old cabins, you know, they find the old, like that old one here on Foster's Place. That still that was back there, it was a perfectly good working still, and I don't know what happened to it. One day it just turned up missing.
Yeah.
And we left it there because it was so cute,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it was, you know, they had it set up and it was a working still.
Keith but, Foster, that's where Lammers is now? Or,
uh-huh. Yeah.
And the still was on?
Yeah, on the corner. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
About halfway in this 40 acres right here, just right straight across from my house.
Oh, okay. So,
practically.
Well, did Lammers take this?
Lammers bought it from another family.
Yeah, but did they get the whole 160?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't have it marked to tell me that.
Yeah, they have the whole 160.
Okay, so the still was about in there.
Yeah, right in there. Mm-hmm. Little trail went up there. Actually, when we first moved out there, we were on his property because we couldn't get over to here. And there, Funk had done went and logged back here.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a big, huge pile of logs laying right on the corner of his property. I mean, it was a huge pile of logs that were just rotting. Gorgeous logs that were this big around. And he had pulled them up there and was going to take them over and log them and build a house, but he never did. Just left them there.
Is that when he still owned the Maranatha property, you think?
Funk?
Yeah.
Did he own the Maranatha?
Supposedly, that's where he homesteaded originally.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, I don't know whether he proved up on it or not. But no, Maranatha.
He wasn't
was
there when we were there.
Yeah. But no, that's what Don Herning, that's what brought Don out, was that Lynn told him about this property down here, and he said he came across that place.
Well, I thought Funko homesteaded back in here.
Well, they didn't homestead, apparently, because that's Lundquist. And then this here has no name on it at all, down on the creek. And Lee says that they ran over to the creek at least.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know quite who homesteaded where and when. Yeah. But
this was Maranatha when we came in 53.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was no...
well, Don said he homesteaded in 40... Well, he was in the Army. He was 19. And Lynn was out there then, apparently, or shortly after that.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have been earlier.
Could have been then. He could have, but I never have researched that part of the thing. I researched all of S. Railroad,
mm-hmm.
the property on both sides,
mm-hmm.
and went to the land office and researched the whole thing.
What was the name of the guy at the land office that was always at the front desk?
Came with an H. It was either Hess or Hodges or something like that. I've got it wrote down at home on some of my papers.
I've been trying to think of it for.
For my money, he was an absolute genius when it came to any government property in north of the range.
Yes,
actually.
He was. He knew exactly.
Most of it was in his head, but if it wasn't in his head, he knew right where to go to get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we went out and Robert went out and picked his brain a lot. He was a really nice guy. We really liked him. A lot of people didn't care for him, but I thought he was, like you, I thought he knew. I mean, you know, if they closed that office down, they could use him as a filing cabinet.
Right.
He knew everything. Mm-hmm. He knew everything there was to know about the federal law of homesteading.
No, when I was over yesterday, you said that you had a map. Is this the map that you have? This
no, mine is in this area, right here only, just blown up in that area only. It's not that big.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the old school district map.
Yeah, we've got one you can take home with you because this goes clear over to Esther, I think. And it's really fascinating to look at.
Mm-hmm.
Here's Paradise.
That's creek.
Yeah, it is.
Did you know Mrs. Rydell or the
mm-hmm.
Rydells?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they, did. They came out here pretty early, apparently.
Yeah, they were. They were out here, before, a year or two before us. Yeah.
Maddie said that Maddie said she ended up having a lot of men that she kind of took care of, bachelors out of here. Did you end up with bachelors also that you were kind of always mothering?
Well,
or?
Yeah, sort of. McQueen
mm-hmm.
He was always over at the house. George Dornath was always over at the house. My husband liked to play chess, so they all played. There was about five of them that got together and played chess.
And you're referring to your little cabin in the back? I mean, you have
That little cabin.
Three babies,
yeah.
You, and a couple men in the house.
Well, no, they didn't live there, just my husband lived there.
I know, but just coming over. I mean,
for playing chess.
Oh, yeah. They had, and it was a house for everything. I mean, Bushy lived over off Steel Creek.
Oh, yeah. Well, Steel Creek or off of Steeps?
Or Steeps, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Bushy is...
Where the big bend is.
Who's Bushy? What, last name?
5 Mile, yeah. Here's the Steeps. Here's the Steeps. Here must be... No, where's 5 Mile? Because that's where they were.
Okay, here's the bend.
Okay, yeah. So it must be... Yeah, they aren't on this, are they?
Oh, this is Ruby Rasmussen. It was his mother-in-law.
Ruby, of course.
Yeah.
Rasmussen didn't sound familiar, but I remember Ruby.
Yeah, Ruby was his mother-in-law.
Okay.
And then this is Joe's place.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so he would have been right in here, 5 miles.
Yeah, and I used to get the calves. He would have a calf or two, and if the calves in those days got down, you know, even the heifers, if they got down, they didn't want to bother with them. Joe Lawler, off of Farmer's Loop over there, off
mm-hmm.
of Yankovich Road, rather. They didn't want to bother with them, so...
Okay, you're talking about dairying people,
yeah.
Right?
They would get a hold of me, and I'd go over and get them. And I don't know, I could just bring them out of it. And but they didn't want to bother. And one day I went over to Joe Lawler's, and he had this one little calf that was out of his best milker. And he said, but she's been down for 3 days, and I don't want to bother with her. And she was about 4 days old. So I brought her home. We had these logs going across the middle of the house, and I put a rope down and made her a saddle out of a burlap sack and stuck her legs through it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started nursing her. And it took about a week to get her where she wasn't diarrhea. And I gave her raw eggs and different things that she shot her with penicillin and, you know, did all that stuff.
And is this where you got your milkers?
Yeah, this particular little calf. We bought a Daisy. She was our Guernsey.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a Guernsey, but a...
Jersey?
No. Yeah, Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Big, humongous calf. Anyway, this little calf, about a week after I had her, her legs just hung. She wouldn't try to stand up, do anything. And one night we heard her paw on her feet. And the kids, everybody jumped out of bed. And here she was. But I taught that cow to come to me when I whistled like a dog,
mm-hmm.
you know, called her like a dog. And I sold her to Bushy because she was, a good out of good stock, good milker, and Bushy wanted her. And she was, threw twins every year.
Oh, for heaven's
sake. Became the best milker in the Tanana Valley, literally. I mean, it's papered that she's
mm-hmm.
the best milker in the Tanana Valley. I could still go over 5 years later and call her, and she'd come to the fence.
What was her name? What'd you name her?
Daisy.
That was
Daisy.
That's a perfect name.
A beautiful Holstein.
Well,
she's just too big for us, you know.
Where were
she was a Holstein, right?
Yeah, she was a Holstein.
Big ones.
It's too big for us, so we didn't.
Where were you getting your feed for these cattle? Who was
right there on our farm?
So you
that's what that big piece of ground is. We raised potatoes, and then we had about 20 acres of hay.
For yourself, and did you also sell
for
hay? Okay, 20 acres was what you needed for your 4 cows.
Yeah, about that.
Mm-hmm.
What equipment did you use to harvest hay?
Well, I have an old rake that's a horse-drawn,
right.
And we had a sickle mower,
mm-hmm.
and then we just shocked it and stuck it up.
Sure.
You know, I had one of those old shockers,
mm-hmm.
and I just sold it actually to Bernie Carl, It's out. It's now in the Chino Hot Springs Road Museum.
Museum, huh?
Both all those pieces are. Mm-hmm. Everything that I had out there, from the time we got there, Robert never.
What kind of hay did you grow?
Oats. Oat hay.
Oats. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's what we raised over here on the. We homesteaded. Let's see. Here's May Ackerman's. So. Probably right in here someplace, section 36.
Well, when did you do that?
Well, we didn't homestead. We bought a whole parcel over here. There was 480 acres, and we raised for about 10 years, we raised certified seed oats over there.
Oh.
And I just had to sell it recently because I just couldn't handle it. Right. Couldn't take care of it, and I didn't want it to grow back up.
How did you get in there? Let's see.
We built a road.
Of course, the road came down here someplace closer.
Let's see. The road come over here, and this little point right here, mm-hmm. we come on this section line, and this section line just tipped right there mm-hmm. and hit both of these things. So what we did is we asked the state for a deviation, and we came and deviated around like this, all and right. then went down this neck.
Huh.
And this piece right here, this is the piece right there.
Huh.
It's
a lot of water in there.
No, it isn't. It's the most beautiful ground you ever laid to his eyes on. I don't know what... that whole potlatch pond stuff is a bunch of garbage. Because that's the best ground in the state of Alaska for growing oats and peas and, you know, that sort of
thing. Bottom land, I mean, as far as soil.
We had... I have a building over there, that you know, that big tin building.
Mm-hmm.
That building is 40 feet wide, 120 feet long. On 90 acres of that, I forget what the yield was because it was humongous. We filled that with bins 8 feet high, the full length of it.
Wow.
And half wide, 20 feet by 110 feet long and 8 feet high out of 1 year of oat raising of certified seed. The most beautiful seed in
Europe. Who are you selling your seed to?
We sold them to all the farmers around, you know, just typical farmers. We sold them as far away as Anchorage. And, you know, they come up and get them. Beautiful seed. And the last, I even took them to California with us. And California was really interested because when we took them through the border, the ag guys inspected them and they said, boy, these are weed-free, everything. And they wanted to know where we got them. We told them we raised them. And they were very interested in it. But couldn't get it to pass their legislature. Mm-hmm. They didn't want them into the California. Because mm-hmm. it would ruin their monopoly on their stuff.
Right.
So it was real hard to get into California.
And so when you just sold this land, has it always been... maintained, you harvested?
Oh yeah, up until last year. Yeah, up until Bob got sick, yeah. Yeah, it was
still
almost 200 acres cleared, yeah.
Can you drive in there from
Yeah, we
Hot
built
Springs?
This road.
Okay.
Yeah, we built a road into it. Put a bridge across the Chena there.
Yeah.
And that's another fight we had with the state. We put this bridge in, and they said we had to be responsible for the public going across it, and we had to open it up. And I told them, not on your life. If I have to be responsible for it, I close it, you know, because I'm not going to be responsible for somebody, you know, running off of it. So we put a gate across it and fought with them for 10 years over it. And finally, this guy went to Anchorage to a seminar in Anchorage, and he was telling them about my bridge and me closing it, and he said, so... You know, you can't make her responsible for the public. Why are you even trying? It was his boss, you know. So he comes home after 10 years and apologizes to me for, you know. I mean, and this is after my husband dies. And I said, so now what?
Yeah.
You know. And so the new guy that I sold it to, he doesn't have to be responsible for the public. But for 10 years, they tried to hold me responsible.
Yeah, right.
You know. But anyway, like I said, I sold it because I couldn't do anything with it. Just I sold it with all the
How many acres was that out there?
480. We had 200 cleared. It had a harvester on it. Everything.
Who'd you sell to?
A guy off of McGrath Road, Frank Dye.
Frank Dye.
Yeah. He's a bachelor. He just, you know, he just wants to farm, and so he bought the machinery and everything. So.
What would you look for to turn off the Hot Springs Road to get on that road?
Well, you know where the Anders Cache is?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, straight across from Anders Cache, there's some trailers.
Right.
Yeah, there's three sets of trailers mm-hmm. right there. The very first set of trailers back, you know, the road that goes up the hill.
Right, behind Anders.
No, back further, back this way towards us.
Okay.
That road that goes straight up the hill.
Oh,
and
yeah,
then you come to Andrew's Cache, mm-hmm, the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right straight across from that road on the section line is where our road goes in.
Oh.
But we never cut it into the main road because that was another controversy. The state wanted us to put in a commercial driveway.
Oh, yeah.
And so we told them, what for? You know, this isn't a commercial road yet. And so we never closed that part mm-hmm. of it, but we just used the other people's driveway.
Oh, I see.
And mm-hmm. went into their
right.
driveway, and
okay.
they kept it closed.
Well, that's why it's never been
right.
obvious that it was there.
And so then we deviated back onto the section line mm-hmm. and straight in. But and the fellow that bought the place knows these people, and he doesn't want to open it up
no.
either just yet. So
no reason to really just have
yeah.
traffic back in there he didn't want.
So. And there's a lot of places. See, the Potlatch Ponds was one controversy. And this here is what they call the Two Rivers Ag Parcels. And they didn't even contest it, and yet it's, I mean, here's a Potlatch Ponds, and right here is a ag parcel for Two Rivers. Here's a Potlatch Ponds. I mean, all around you is Potlatch Ponds, and yet they didn't contest the Two Rivers. And so Two Rivers parcels are all out in there, and beautiful ag parcels, but they never said a word about them, you know. And so ours was one of the Two Rivers parcels. And I've got two on both sides of me. I've got Potlatch Pond articles, parcels that wouldn't go. They wouldn't let them, you know, they wouldn't let them go because they said it's wetlands. But, I mean, within a year after we were out there, we were plowing. Now, if that tells you what wetlands is.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, I've got five wells out there on the property.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is take a post hole digger, and you got a well of the most beautiful water you ever
huh.
had eyes on. So there's... It was nothing to get water, nothing.
No, it's down the bottom there.
Yeah, and it's beautiful ground. No no gravel, no, you know. It's perfect ag ground, and yet they're not letting it loose. I mean, to me, if they're going to have an ag pot, you know, place in Fairbanks,
yeah.
which they never will,
mm-hmm.
That is the area to do it, because that low ground, yeah, it's got moss on it, but once that moss is off, that ground's beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
No thermal cars to worry about? That's odd.
No,
that you expect none of these sound.
We never hit, there was only one spot that we hit permafrost in, and that was an area that had clay.
Mm-hmm.
It had that Alaskan clay in it.
Hmm.
But that was all. The rest of the, about 440 acres of it is beautiful farmland. Beautiful.
Is that the Alaskan clay that people
mm-hmm.
were using to make that brown and white?
Yep. It's beautiful clay.
I don't think we see any of that any longer.
Well, there's a whole bunch of it out there on that piece of property.
But I don't think
you know, you can tell where it's at because it's raised.
Mm-hmm.
The ground is raised and there's no trees on it. It's those, you've seen those gnarly little bushes that come up and look like mooses ate the top
yeah.
of it. Well, that, under that is
mm-hmm.
is that clay ground under it. Mm. Almost every time you do that, it's under. And it's kind of raised up like...
Not like something pushed it up.
Yeah,
it sounds like.
And but yet the clay is probably that far under the ground, and,
mm-hmm.
and it's.
Any idea how deep it goes?
Well, in one area we dug through, you know, to make a water diversion ditch
mm-hmm.
on the upper side of our property, and we never did reach the bottom of it.
Hmm.
And we put the ditch about 6 feet deep,
mm-hmm.
so that we could divert the water down into the mm-hmm. creek.
Pretty good deposit, then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was huge. And it was probably about 2 or 3 acres, mm-hmm. at least 3 acres.
Mm. That's
yeah,
a sizable chunk of clay.
Yeah, it was beautiful clay. It was kind of a bluish-gray look.
Did you ever sell any of it?
No.
So people have never commercialized that one?
Mm-hmm. No. That would be, you know, but see on those ag parcels, they retain all of the
subsurface
mineral
rocks.
Like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, we never were interested in them anyway, but we were more interested in the farming because there is such a potential up here for farming that it boggles my mind, but it will never grow. It will never fly because of the control that Washington that other states have over Alaska.
Did any of your kids ever get into farming at all?
No. It was too hard.
Yeah, it's hard
work,
right?
The kids...
I don't know whether this is cell chart or that's an eye. He would be on the other side of Nordale Road now, right off where Severns Road comes out.
Cell chart?
Yeah, is that a name you ever heard of?
Mm-mm, never did hear of that.
It's just a little parcel in there. And then Betcher was another name. Was this a name you remember? He apparently was, what did Lee say about him?
What was his name?
Betcher.
That's a familiar name, Betcher.
I was suspecting it was spelled B-O-E-T-C-H-E-R, something like that, a good German name.
Yeah, that's a familiar name.
And he was over in that same general area, according to Lee, and was something of a...
They were all the old winter trails, yeah, winter's
trail. Yeah, it probably had to do with that. I think he did something... He's the one, I guess Don was saying, he was the one that brought in the Siberian wheat that he played with, and shrubs and things like that that he was working with to see what would grow. And so, I don't know, maybe he could have been on that property, but in that area.
That's not the old fella that, it was probably Ralph. That's not the old fella that his wife was killed with, is it?
No, that was... Rudy Wilbert.
That's what I thought.
His place was right down here someplace. And then Harold, I think, bought that property after that terrible accident. Mm-hmm. However, that would have been over here, because I think Wilbert sold this 80 to Severns.
So where'd you go berry picking? I know where I go berry picking. So you went right there on your land.
Sure.
We never went for
cranberries and blueberries.
Mm-hmm.
Do you also have currants?
Yeah. On the burn piles. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a big, huge patch of them back there.
Yeah. Did you know Harry Denton?
Yeah, Mr. Denton.
He apparently was a character.
Yeah. Oh, you couldn't go down to the creek and get water without seeing Harry Denton. I mean, he was a character and a half. We always thought he had a screw loose, but he really didn't. You know, he just was a...
Well, he was partially blind.
Yeah.
Which wouldn't help. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be a little more defensive, perhaps.
Yeah. He just was real opinionated. But he loved kids. You know, he thought kids were... Because my kids would go down there and play and...
Unlike Joe Kruger, according to Don, who kind of brushed the kids away like he was afraid of them or something.
Yeah, he was. He was afraid of them, I think. But no, Harry was, he was a nice man, actually. You know, just opinionated, just all.
It's interesting, the bunch of bachelors that... It figures, because they probably were a lot of GIs that could come out and get property. But Joe Kruger, Denton, Bob Strait, McQuinn was a bachelor, wasn't he?
McQuinn was a bachelor
and
for
what about
years.
Monet?
Yeah, he was a bachelor.
Mm-hmm. Where'd these guys find their wives?
Well, McQuinn married a woman from Germany, I believe. She came in, but she... kind of just took him for everything that he had, almost, and then divorced him. But this was later. This was probably in the 80s that happened. And Bob just never did get married, period.
Did anybody bring over any mail order brides?
None that I know of. I mean, they may have gone out and got them, but you know, without knowing them.
Yeah, Tilly was obviously born in Germany or someplace over there. You know anything about her background? What brought her? Did they come up together?
Living together when we first come.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but I mean, did they come to Fairbanks as a couple?
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they came as a couple. But it wasn't until about 55 or 57 that they decided to split the homestead.
Yeah, I think it was...
And it was only because they couldn't live together. I mean, they just
They got along fine once they separated.
They did. Yeah, they did.
And then they were back and forth.
Yeah, and she went and helped him, and he'd come and help her. And, you know, they were.
They just didn't need to live in the same place, that's all.
And I can understand that.
Oh, yeah, and Carl Lindstrand was another bachelor, and all these apparently kind of centered on Carl Herning's place.
Mm-hmm. Louis Prudhomme was a bachelor. We took care of Louis all the time. He died from a bee sting.
Oh, he's the one that Colleen asked about, and for some reason Don never got an answer out on that.
Yeah, Louis had been up here for out of the military 2 years, and he was here in the 40s, early 40s, and he didn't even know he was allergic to him until one day he got stung, and he come down to the house, and he was swollen, just. Oh. And I said, "What happened to you?" And he said, "Well, he didn't know a bee stung him," and he was just. And I said, "You get to the doctor. You get there now." And so the doctor told him to keep this kit with him. Of course, Louis, you know, he was just an accident, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next time we didn't see him, he usually come down to our house on a Sunday morning, and he'd sit there and drink coffee with my husband, and he didn't come. And so Bob said, "I got to go up this afternoon and see about Louis." And so he went up there and met Bruce Earns, who bought this piece of property here. This piece.
Okay, and what was his name?
No, he bought this piece right here. Piece of Bruce, Pete Akins.
Pete Akins. What was his name?
Right outside the door, we found a bee's nest on the rose bush out there. And so we're pretty sure. And his garden, see, he had this little porch. And at the end of the porch, he had built it up with a place to plant onions and different things. And we think that he was out there pulling weeds out of that and disturbed the bees somehow, and they stung him. Because that's what they said. He died of throat restriction.
Yeah.
That's what he died of, suffocated. So, poor old guy. He was such a sweetheart. Anyway, like I said, yeah, we've had several old bachelors over the years. This guy here was a bachelor.
Leroy DeLong?
Well, not him, but the guy that he contested and took over his.
Do you remember who he was?
Oh, yeah, I do, but it's escaped me right now.
If you think of it, we'll write it in.
Your husband was a sheet metal man. He had his training.
He took his training in San Francisco when he was only 17, 16, just barely old enough to start his apprenticeship. And he finished in 3 years, and then he went to work for a Baird sheet metal in Fresno. But we found out that, he died of mesothelioma, which is a rare asbestos cancer of the chest cavity. And it takes 15 to 45 years for it to come out,
develop.
And so I went back, and he had been exposed at municipal utilities at Fort Greeley and at Clear. All three of those places had this particular stuff that it's a Kalo and Pabco and one other that causes it.
Oh.
No other insulation causes that, just these three.
Yes, so let me send him to a home.
Those three places that he was exposed at.
Roger Hughes.
And when it comes out, when it does explode in the body and becomes active, you have 3 months to live.
Sakes. So he didn't have hardly any time at all?
We discovered it in June, and he died in October. I mean, that's how fast it went.
Yeah.
And it only affects the cavity of the chest.
Wow.
You know, not the lungs, but the cavity of the chest. Your chest cavity gets thicker and thicker and thicker.
Oh, for goodness sake. So and eventually it just kind of
grows massively. Because whenever it breaks out, you don't just have one little tumor someplace.
No,
you have
the whole thing.
It's totally encased with it. Totally. When we went to the University of Washington, he was totally encased in his lung cavity.
Mm-hmm.
Liquid was starting to come out of it into his lung cavity, and push his lungs up. And
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it was just real close, real fast, very fast. Poor guy. We just hardly had time to get used to it.
And this was from these, this was an asbestos affliction.
Kalo, Pabco, and one other, and it's the high pressure pipes.
Ah.
They wrap it, the high pressure pipes are wrapped with it, and it. And the interesting thing is there was four guys, two boiler pipe workers and two sheet metal men working on these jobs, these three jobs, and all of them are dead of mesothelioma.
Oh.
All four of them. The four.
Do you have a lawsuit with them over there?
Yeah, Bob started it before he died, but I just got a letter from the lawyers in San Francisco saying that the two companies, one of the companies that manufacture it, which still manufacture it for third world countries, by the way,
of course,
and still sell it, they are filing for protective bankruptcy against mesothelioma suits. And it's the interesting thing is it's a rare that only less than 2,000 people a year get it, and yet they're filing bankruptcy to protect themselves from it. And you know, I told the lawyer I'd never expect to reap anything, but sue them for the max. If I get it, fine, I'll give it to somebody.
Right.
But, you know, leave it in a will to somebody. But they will pay for it. You know, it just...
Well, you'd like to see them shut down.
Oh, I would. I mean, I'd like to see them stop selling it to the third world countries because they're killing those people.
Sure.
I mean, it's that simple. They are literally killing those people. Anyway, just... And like I said, my husband was one of those people that could do anything he wanted to do if he just set his mind to it. I now have a full turning log mill in my tin building out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally, you put the log on, it turns it, comes back, makes the groove, and then when you take it off, it goes on down the bench, and over here is the drill press that makes the holes on each side,
right.
And it rolls off and it's done. I mean, that's how, and he made it in about 2.5 months.
Oh, he built it
in the front yard. Went and got his books, looks at them, read them. All
the people are talented.
Yeah.
The very kind of guy that needed to homestead in Alaska.
Oh yeah.
Oh, he never. That's why he had all that equipment and stuff. Mm-hmm. Because he did everything himself. He always did everything himself.
And enjoyed doing it.
Yeah, and he enjoyed doing it. He enjoyed making roads. I mean, like I said, he's probably built over on the road that goes off. Blaine Road that goes over
to Gold Stream.
To Gold Stream. He cut that one through for a guy that was homesteading way over in there. He's probably cut through 4 or 5 roads.
Now, you've got all this recorded in your diaries, journals, whatever? Because you've got a big story there.
Yeah.
So when I made the turnaround yesterday in your yard, I saw you have a root cellar across from the house. When did you build your root cellar?
Well, the big hangar building across from my house was originally the root cellar. It was originally underground.
That great big building?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in 1968.
How did you get the dirt over the top of it? I mean,
the hill was there. You notice the hill goes up.
Oh, building into the hill.
Yes. And actually, we pulled the hill away. Really.
Okay.
And so it was underground to begin with. And when we first built it, it was just logs standing upright. And then whenever we could afford it, we pulled all the logs out and put the building that's there now.
So the only root cellar you have left is the little one?
But the little one is that one we
that's
built
your
probably
home.
25 years ago.
For just home use?
Yeah, it's just a small 20 by 20, 10 by 12 by 12, I think it is, yeah. Yeah, 12 by 12. Yeah, it's just a small one. But like I said, the hangar was the original root cellar that we had. We had as high as 45 to 60 ton in there of potatoes at one time. My son never wants to see another potato as long as he lives.
What kind of potatoes did you grow?
Kennebecs and Tetons and...
Blue potatoes ever?
No.
That
we never
was
went
further
into,
on?
You couldn't have sold
into,
those to the,
no,
to the
military. Wouldn't take those.
Anything like Swedish potatoes?
No, military wouldn't take them either.
So
I mean, if you were going to farm and sell, you had to do the Irish potato.
Right.
The conventional potato.
And what kind of carrots were you growing out here?
The kind I was had was the Natty's Corliss, and they are beautiful carrots. Mm-hmm. They grow really well.
Did you
and the Blue Lake green beans grow really well. I both, you know, I used to have a fair booth all the time and would sell them at the fair. I had quite an interesting discussion with the guy, with the, what was the lady's name that used to be manager of the fair?
Oh, Janet Baird?
Yeah, Janet Baird. Before, it was after Janet Baird, the next one that took over after Janet. I told him, I said, you know, you're getting too far away from an agricultural fair, and there's plenty of agricultural in Fairbanks to support that fair. And because I was on this citizens advisory committee, and
Carl.
And so I said, how come you don't have the individual farm and gardens display anymore? He said, oh, we never had that. And I said, oh, really? And he said, no, never had that. There was not that many farms. And I said, well, I beg to differ with you, because there was. And he said, no, I don't think so. I've never had one. And so the next meeting, I brought I got a trophy about this high. You know, and on the bottom it says, individual farm and garden first place. So I just took it and I said, now, would you like to discuss this some more? And he goes, I never knew they had that. And I said, obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously you never knew. Anyway, but I couldn't get him to, you know, really get back into the agriculture. It's, you know,
no agriculture much to left at the fair anymore.
Yeah. I even fought with them over I said, all the donations go into that agricultural museum, and look what you've got stuck over there. Pictures. I said, you never even, you know, you stick the agricultural outside. I said, there's so many, many people in this valley that knows about agriculture that you could have a museum that would boggle the mind if you just wanted to, but instead they tore it out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, they've got pieces of machinery in the yard, but they never use it for agriculture anymore.
They're doing more creamers along that line now than at the fair.
Yeah. So,
is when Curtula switched and refused funding to the university because that was for agriculture, and obviously it was going to be the bedroom community of Anchorage. We don't need agriculture.
Yep. That's exactly what he did. Yeah.
I had just spent a year getting two big parcels for a red meat program. The 5,000 acre at Homer, and
Homer,
the 10,000 acre chunk on Kodiak Island. Mm-hmm. And to my knowledge, I've never had any red meat on them.
Yeah. Well, I have watched agriculture, you know, for the last 40 years, and I've watched it destroyed piece by piece. You know, like this potato growing, that they're thinking of seed potato growing for China now. You know, well, they've got to study it. Well, I don't see why. They've got some of the most beautiful studies you've ever laid eyes on. You know, at the university, they did all kinds of studies on potatoes. And yes, we do grow absolutely, you know, disease-free potatoes here. I don't see any reason to study it another 5 years, you know. They could go into production right now if they wanted to.
But our researchers wouldn't have anything to do.
That's right.
Well, it isn't even that. What they do, they research it to death, and then the interest is gone. Mm-hmm. And so nothing happens. Yeah, nothing happens.
What about carrot growing? I think it's interesting that you grew carrots. And, of course, I remember buying carrots down here on the Chena. And then when I went down to Delta this year, I happened to drive into a carrot place that they told me that was last year they were going under again. What kind of carrot production did you have, and did you have to do something special to get the land good for carrots, or?
All you have to do is make sure it's rototill deep enough, is all, so that the carrot won't, you know, because the ground is cold, but it will grow straight if you rototill it deep enough, and at least 8 to 10 inches you should rototill deep, as deep as you can get. And I didn't do anything but just hill them one time, and that was all. And the rest of the time I just let them grow. Didn't bother them. And I had beautiful carrots, straight carrots. I probably had 20 ton. I raised a whole, almost of 2/3 of an acre of carrots, 2/3 of an acre of beans, and an acre of cabbage is usually what I put in. And that was enough to...
Oh, that's a lot.
My kids would... they hate me to this day for carrot picking. Mm-hmm. But anyway, they grew beautifully. As long as you prepared the ground for it, because to me, one of the biggest things they're missing in the state of Alaska is the frozen food market. Our vegetables are absolutely the finest you can grow any place in the world.
They taste so much better.
You know, if they just had a fast food place here to grow it, the people would grow it. All they'd have to do is have a place to put it.
They had this down in Palmer for a while. Green peas.
Mm-hmm. But the,
had two freezer units.
It doesn't help Fairbanks.
No.
Yeah. Fairbanks has to have their own. And peas, what a product to pick. I mean, you know, when there's so many other broccoli, cauliflower, carrots, onions. I mean, you know, all of this stuff would grow. It grows fabulously here.
Since you were involved in agriculture, did you ever get involved when when we first came here in '70s? There was it the '70s? I don't know. Maybe it's the '80s. But the Koreans with the barley out here on Chena Hot Springs. Did you get involved with that at all?
No, we never cared for barley because we catered more to with our, like over here with the straw. After we harvest the oats, you have straw. Mm-hmm. And the straw is a saleable product for the mushers. They prefer the straw of oats to barley because the barley, doolillies get in the dog's fur and mm-hmm. bore in, and they have to pull it out. And when they found out we were selling oat hay, I couldn't keep the stuff. Couldn't keep it on hand. I mean, they'd come right to the field mm-hmm. and take all the straw I could produce. So we never ever bothered with barley. We never cared for the barley in any way. The oats are more nutritional. They're like the horses here. If you feed them oat straw and oat hay through the winter, they won't lose weight like the rest of, like they do when they eat barley. They keep their weight, and we've proved that through Layla's horses. Several people's horses around here. We just, you know, told them to try this, and if it doesn't work, we'll cut your feed bill in half. Well, none of them ever lost any weight. Just feeding on the oat hay, and we'd put in about 50 acres of oat hay, and then the rest of it we'd let mature out into seed, and then use the straw, sell the straw. And the straw sold for as much as the oat, baled oats. So, you know, it's a good byproduct of the mm-hmm. of the, and like I said, we never had any trouble selling any of it. I just sold last year's crop right after this auction to the Delta barley farmers, or because they couldn't get them, you know, desperate sold them all oat hay. I mean oat seed instead of barley seed, because they couldn't get the barley seed that wasn't. Certified for one thing, and this was certified, so they sold it all to them right after the sale was over.
So do you consider yourself a farm woman and your husband was a sheet metalist? Or do you think of him as a farmer too?
Well, neither, because you couldn't farm without working in the state of Alaska. You cannot do it. You have to support that farm some way.
Yep.
And so you have to go to work to do it. And so we owned Fairbanks Sheet Metal for 20 years. And that's what we did for a living, to feed ourselves. And then we farmed, because that's what we wanted to do. But as far as making money, I'm not so sure we made any money.
There used to be an old fella in town that ran a sheet metal shop. And he retired.
I know who you're talking about. I'm trying to think of his name. He was an old guy, single guy.
Had a young wife.
Oh, he had a young wife? It wasn't Wilbur Brothers, was it?
No.
It was before him.
I know
who you're talking about, but I can't remember his name.
No.
We bought ours from Johnny Albright. When we first came up here, my husband went to work for Johnny Albright.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted a sheet metal man, but he didn't have any work for him right then, so he put him on the counter. And he'd work him in the counter in the wintertime. And then whenever the jobs started opening up, he would do sheet metal work mm-hmm. for him. And finally, after about 2 or 3 years, he said, "Bob, I don't want to do this. I don't want to run this shop." He said, "You take it over." And of course, we didn't have any money. We were just young kids that didn't have a thing. And he said, "Go down to the bank and tell Ed I sent you and tell him to loan you the money."
This would be an escrow.
And it was, right. Yeah. And so we did. And we borrowed $10,000 and bought all of Johnny's equipment, mm-hmm. all the sheet metal equipment, and put it in the back of the store there. And
And that was in the early 50s then?
It was 50, about 57, 56, about 57. And then he worked for him until 64, and then we opened the sheet metal shop ourselves in 64 and run it till 80, about 80, 82.
Was that in the same location?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like I said, in those days, you go down to the bank and, you know, if you hadn't, once you established who you were and what you represented,
well, you could borrow anything. Johnny Albright behind you didn't hurt anything.
No.
Who you knew helped.
Yeah. John just said, go tell Ed to give you the money. Mm-hmm. Go tell him I said to give you the money.
Did you borrow money to buy that land that over there by the news minor that you're telling me about where the hospital is?
Mm-hmm.
You just were able to buy that land.
We did. Well, we bought it. We paid for, we would pay payments until we could pay cash and pay, then as we got the sheet metal shop going, we could, pay down the mortgage real quick.
And did you ever intend to do anything with that land? Like, was that, maybe you're going to move into town?
No, we never thought about moving.
You just were buying the land because it was available to you?
Yeah, just investment.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We bought land all over. I mean, we had, on Grail, there where the old MAPCO put their first station, or the Tesoro put their first station, with that, the artist, the woman artist, what's her name? She lived up off of Gilmore Trail.
Edna Wilder?
Wilder.
Yeah.
She owned it, and we bought it from her, and then we sold it about 2 or 3 years later to
And
Tesoro.
where was this now?
Downtown here on Grail, the 3rd Street and Grail.
Was this where they lived, where they
That's
had a house?
That's where Edna had a house.
Okay,
yeah.
I remember that place.
Sold, another bachelor, we gave him the house and he tore it down and took it off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we had the property there and we were gonna build a building on it, and this guy came along and decided he wanted to buy it for a film station. That's when they put that film station there. And there was some other property he owned that we sold and bought over the years. We owned 2 or 3 houses downtown.
We have another thing here that I think you will find fascinating and you can take home.
Worked at the Geophysical Institute.
Mm-hmm.
The drought center.
Mm-hmm.
He was an interesting one.
You know, I have an aerial map too of this whole.
Oh, look at that. This 49 and 99.
Oh, look at that.
I've cut my pictures out of the calendar.
Oh, how neat.
Easier.
Where did you get this?
Well, this outfit in AeroMaps in Anchorage sent a whole bunch of these up to the map office on campus.
Oh, really?
And they were getting
beautiful.
Away and not going very fast, and so we took advantage of getting a
bunch
of them.
Oh, good for you.
Oh,
so wonderful.
Real close, your name's on it.
Really?
Where?
Well, he's saying it's yours.
Oh, yes.
I see what you're saying. Yes. Oh, I thought you meant I'm here someplace.
Have to put find a big empty
home.
Space to put it on.
Oh, my goodness.
And we'll have a clean map that we have it all marked up. And
wonderful.
Take
look at that.
Oh, it is.
Yeah,
this is fun to look at.
This is when we first came up.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. This must be, here must be the Stees.
Mm-hmm.
And here must be Steel Creek.
Steel Creek, yeah.
Wandering around. Of course, it runs out before it gets out to us.
Well, see, this is...
What is that?
Louds and...
Oh, that could be.
And, it would have to be, see, because here's the valley.
Yeah, okay.
And
mm-hmm.
here's the... let me see.
That's...
let me look at this name tag here.
Here's Holmes, here's...
Okay, Farkas had this whole thing was cleared right in through here on the Chino Hot Springs Road on the trail that was out there.
So you say that's loud? Is that what
so that could be Farkas's?
No,
that's probably Farkas's.
What do you grow out there?
Potatoes.
Yeah, potatoes. Most everybody grew potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And see, then on up, right straight up from there is where Bert Stemple had his place,
right.
And up off the on the Chino Hot Springs Road.
Is this also ag land? This piece in
that
here?
Was that is what's her name's place? That is Let me see this again.
No, Rainier's.
Rainier's.
Oh,
that's Rainier's right
okay,
there.
So that's Rainbow Valley.
Yeah, that's Rainbow Valley, right there.
Hmm.
Coming up into there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And did they clear it for Rainbow Valley for trailer court, or was that potatoes?
Oh, that was...
Well, they didn't have potatoes there. They just had
a
picnic ground.
So they cleared it, and that's how they were going to make money.
I think that they were GI. He was a GI. Rainier was a GI, and they didn't have to clear ground. And so a lot of these homesteads didn't have ground cleared on them because of that. But most of the farms that were out there that had to clear the ground, they had to do something with it. So they went ahead and farmed a little. But
that wasn't the reason most of
it wasn't the reason.
Took the ground in the first place.
Okay, this here is the graveyard, right?
Must be. That'd be about right.
The graveyard's been there for a long time.
Mm-hmm. You mean this piece right here?
No, that's up in there.
Mm-hmm. I think that's...
Because here's the stease.
Because
comes up here, you see. So that must be Birch Hill.
Well, what's cleared by Birch Hill? What's right there?
Well, the military has on this side.
The tank farm's back there.
Ammunition dump?
Yeah, on this side.
Or is it there?
I was trying to see where that old site was. See, it's back in here someplace.
Mm-hmm.
See, here's the back.
That's why I was thinking
that maybe...
Well, and there was a military camp of some kind off the old stees,
someplace.
Which must have been about in here,
right,
and
in
this
there.
Could have had something to do with that, I suppose, clearing on the other side.
This is the old stees here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know where the bus barn is now?
Yeah.
And that used to be an old military base in there, too. That's where my husband got also a dose of this. They tore that building down, and... it had the Kalo in it, Pabco.
So that stuff's probably still in the ground.
I'm sure it is.
The bus barn's going to be...
that's pretty close to where
they're
going to
put in the new buildings there.
Yeah, what's the name of the company?
Walmart. Home Depot, something like that. New big place was the pipeline yard.
Home Depot's what's coming to town. And they're going to build in there next to Ford. That's very close to where this is.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think it's back.
Well, this is back by the railroad, over by the railroad. You know where the railroad is.
Let's see. Is this? Where's the railroad?
And the railroad was there when we first came in, because that's the way Trainer Gate Road is where we got into the military. So.
Well, this must be the railroad right here.
That must be the railroad.
And this is...
This goes through Island Home, or...
Not Island Home, but...
What you call it? Hamilton Acres.
Yeah.
And so it would be here. This is that military place.
Yeah, right on the railroad then. Okay, here's the railroad over here. Well, this must be the yard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Signal Corps still had some stuff in there when we first came to town.
Yeah. They didn't tear it down until probably in the early 60s, all that down in there. Yeah, it was in the early 60s. See, they had just, up on this side of town, they had just grassed that runway was still there when we first came.
Oh, yeah, see, here's where they're building.
And they're building it, and this was still there when we got here.
Wheat field was still in use. Colleen looked at that and said, oh, what a short runway.
Mm-hmm, it was.
And Don says, well, for that time, it was a pretty good-sized runway, because he was working out there after the war, apparently.
That was where the bachelor story came in, because he was working at Pan Am.
Oh, yeah?
And Pan Am was feeding...
Oh, Carl now was working at Pan Am.
Right.
I don't know whether Don was.
The food that was left over from a flight... Back in those days when they would make food for 30 people and maybe only sold 18 tickets, but they kept all that aboard and whatnot. And so he would bring some of this stuff home. and they got so much coming home that they couldn't use it, so they got passing it on to the bachelors in the community. And so the bachelors have gotten the habit of coming down to Carl's place to get something to eat.
And then Maddie Lee came along, and they're still sponging and sponging and sponging.
Only she's making homemade bread by now, and that's a big drawing attraction.
Yeah, that was. That's what I did for the homemakers, was taught the bread baking.
Right.
And yeah, that really drew the bachelors.
Well, it was funny because I think Nancy or somebody asked Maddie if she didn't resent this. And she said, well, I did, but I guess it just came along with Carl. Which is right. Carl didn't mind. He put up with it. And so they took advantage of it, but he didn't care.
Yeah, I think that the women, they really... it's in all the books, it's in all the history, everything, but the concept, the women really took care of a lot more than their own family.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, sure.
It was, we forget that piece of history as to what everybody's doing. When you bought flour, you didn't buy flour just for your family, because you were going to be making it, and of course if you...
Yeah. You know what, we've got some soup over here.
I had particular days I did things. In those days, I was a little more structured.
Weren't we all?
But I bake bread on Mondays, every Monday. It
and how
matter.
Many loaves did you bake?
About 10, because that's all my kids had for lunch. I made everything. I didn't.
What kind of bread did you make?
Just white bread.
White bread is what you make.
Yeah. Well, wheat bread. I make wheat bread sometimes, but most of the white bread.
And why
doesn't
that spoil you for anything else?
Yeah. And see, we had our own milk, and to this day, I cannot hardly drink milk in the gardens. Still can't.
And you had your own chickens.
I had my own chickens. We had everything. Everything was right there. I never bothered with pigs because I never liked them. So.
And you made your own butter.
Made my own butter. Made everything.
Did you make cheese?
Make cottage cheese, but
cottage
no,
cheese.
Not cheese, but cottage
and did
cheese.
You use rennet from your cows, or did you buy rennet tablets?
No, I even fermented it myself. I didn't put anything in it.
You're in the presence of a purist.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think of what.
What is that?
Well, the fact that you were doing all this stuff before we were going and buying rennet tablets. My mother used rennet tablets to make cheese, so I'm familiar with rennet.
No, my grandmother taught me how to do it without doing that. You just let it spoil and get it before it molds.
You know, I think of all this, and I think the Tanana Valley, you know, the farmers market here and the fair, and I only came into the fair in the 80s when I started doing things with the farmers market, and 75 we came here as military and entered a few things in the fair, and think the fair was already downhill.
Oh, you don't. The fairs we used to have were beautiful fairs, all agricultural. Beautiful fairs. We have nothing of that anymore. Nothing. Like I said, those individual farm and gardens, we would have fun. Because we not only, you know, in fact, that was another fight I had with them, is they had this, I was in the culinary, one of the judges for a long time, and I got, the way they treated all that stuff was like, oh, well, you know, slop it up on the shelf. It don't matter.